This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. This has been one of the most unusual presidential campaigns in recent memory, with unconventional candidates and campaigns that continue to perplex political analysts. And the way the candidates are using social media has been a major reason the experts can't seem to get a handle on this election. Joining us to discuss the role of social media in today's politics are Boot Camp Digital CEO and lead trainer Krista Nair and software architect and developer Dave Hatter. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Krista and Dave, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you, Mark.
Dave, how much would you say that technology accounts for this year's unruly presidential campaign that we've seen so far?
I think on any number of fronts, it's at a massive level. It's not just social media. It's big data and the ability to micro-target. It's the fact that folks can raise huge amounts of money online that they wouldn't have had access or insight into maybe 8-10 years ago. So I think across the board, technology is having an increasingly large impact on the sort of chaotic and crazy thing we're seeing this year. And it's kind of shifting the locus of control around, you know, who controls the messaging and who can say what.
Krista?
Yeah, and I would definitely agree with that. And even build to say control of the message is one of the biggest things. Before, a candidate would say what they had to say and hope the media picked up on the right points. And that's who was controlling the message. Now, they have their own broadcasting and publishing platforms. And there's all these small little blogs out there with tons and tons of readers that are sometimes reporting information faster than traditional media. And that's changing the cycle, I think, a lot as well.
So this is changing it's a power shift. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think there's a definite power shift from more traditional forms of media like TV and radio and even print to online media where Krista mentioned, I mean, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, pick whatever you want, you're to a large extent, depending on how you set it up, in complete control of that message. You can say what you want. You can get your message out regardless of whether the press picks up on it or not, and then potentially have your millions of followers. You know, Trump's got like 6 million followers. Clinton's got close to 4 million. Have these folks push that message out for you. So whether someone reads the newspaper or not, this stuff is getting out into these channels, and it's their message. It's not what someone else wants to say about them. It's whatever they want to say themselves.
And I think the compounding factor is that you have the politicians who now have their own audiences, but every single person can become an advocate and an ambassador and broadcast to their audiences. So, you know, an average person on Facebook is connected to 150 people. So if I tap into something a candidate has said and then I share it, which I'm sure most people actually wish everyone they knew would stop talking politics on Facebook. But
never,
you know, people can amplify that message in a really powerful way like we've never seen before.
You know, Krista, if you're anti-establishment, you have to love social media, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the trends you see. I mean, with some of the candidates that seem to have just blown people away with how well they're doing, a lot of that has to do with they don't need establishments to put them in place anymore.
And even if they can't really get that much traction, they can stay in the race and certainly change the messaging around, where in the past, as soon as the press decided they were a non-entity, they just went away. But now they can stay in there, they can keep raising money using the same tools we're talking about, and certainly have more of a long-term influence, whereas, you know, maybe even in the last election cycle, they may have been gone by now, but they're still out there in this case.
Yeah, and Bernie Sanders has posted on Twitter 5 times in the past hour. So yeah. It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, the sheer volume these folks are putting out. And I think in some cases, it's the actual candidates themselves doing this now instead of, you know, their paid people.
Donald Trump says he runs his own Twitter, and he says he personally posts most of the content on there. Yeah.
That's rather surprising. How much has this changed campaign staffs, though? I mean, it used to be you had certain people who did certain functions. Now you're having to add in all these technology people to do extra functions that weren't here, say, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of it is you need a different set of skills for social media than maybe traditional PR, because you're talking about real time, creating messages that travel is a huge part of it. And that's something where I think there still remains a big opportunity for candidates, is really creating messages that are shareable, sound bites, things that people can quickly share with their friends. Because even if you look at the leading candidates who have millions of followers, the combined audience of the people who follow them is 150 times bigger than that. So rather than just focusing on pushing their own message out, if they can focus on the amplification factor by getting their fans sharing and talking, that's where the true power of this really is.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that's the true power of social media in general is it's, you know, you can control the message and then have your followers amplify that and reach folks who might not even know you exist otherwise. With a message that you want out there as opposed to necessarily what someone else may have said or is saying.
Yeah, and there was a recent study of Facebook that showed that Donald Trump was getting more hits and likes 2-1 over Bernie Sanders. And then it goes Hillary Clinton, Ted Cruz, and John Kasich, who was actually far back on that. But any of that surprise you?
Not so much me. I know at one time Ben Carson on the Republican side had the most Facebook likes. I think Trump has come along and beat him, but, you know,
he's still getting a lot of likes, though, even though he's out of the race.
He's got a huge footprint out there.
Yeah. The other thing, though, that I would say is that all of these numbers can be influenced and gamed. And that's one of the other things you see is accusations flying around about who's got fake followers. So I think Sanders said Clinton had fake followers, and they've then gone through his followers and said, well, he has all these fake followers, too. So, you know, it is hard to just look at a number and actually assume that those are real humans because they can influence them. And I do think to a certain extent, you know, social media experts always say the size of your following doesn't matter, but it kind of does from a psychological standpoint, social proof, right? If somebody has a lot of followers, you're going to take them more seriously. And I think it does influence how people perceive them.
Yeah, I agree with Krista. I certainly don't think the number of followers by itself is the key metric, but certainly more is going to be better because, again, if you can get them to engage and you can get them to share and they can help you get more real followers, not this fake stuff and these bots and so forth, and those folks are engaging and sharing your content, again, you're able to deliver your specific message to people that want to hear it and help you get it out there. And it costs you virtually nothing to do it, I might add, versus direct mail or running ads on the radio or whatever.
How do you think the campaigns are doing in terms of how they're using the social media? Are they using the platforms properly?
I think they're doing a good job, but there still is a lot of opportunity. And here's what I would say. One of the things that I think came across to me in this election cycle is that people want authenticity. They want to feel like they know the person. I remember when Bernie Sanders first announced his candidacy, no one knew who the heck he was. And there was all this stuff about how crazy his hair is, which has since been toned down a little, right? But if you remember, he was like this crazy old man with white hair flying all over the place. And as he's begun to pick up momentum, people are starting to say, you know, they like that they feel like they know who he is. Whereas what you see with some of the more seasoned candidates is you don't feel like you get to know those people as well. And I think one of the real opportunities that social media has for candidates across the board is building more authentic communications with people. I think the White House, for example, does an amazing job with this right now. If you look at the kind of stuff they share Barack and Michelle, you know, dancing together and things that like normal humans do. And it makes people feel like a stronger connection because these are real humans doing real human things. And that's where I see a huge opportunity across the board still is to really humanize the campaigns a little more so people feel like they're getting to know who these people are as humans a little bit, which we've seen is something people want. They want to feel like the candidates are a little less rehearsed and a little more authentic.
And did Barack Obama's campaign set the standard for using the internet when he ran in 08 and again in 12?
I would say yes. I think they did an amazing job of just not just the internet, but just technology in general.
Yeah, if you look at what they did with mobile, for example, you know, one of the things we know is people are attached to their phones. One of the best ways to influence somebody at a specific point in time. If you look at some of the things they did with mobile on election day, where not just were they texting you to say come out and vote, but make sure your friends vote. The polls close in 3 hours. This is the time. And so they really did a great job across the board, I think.
Now, what platform gets used the most by young voters?
So statistically, if you're talking about younger voters, believe it or not, more young people have
18
accounts.
18 to 25, for example.
Sure. Yeah. So more millennials have accounts on Facebook than any other social network. which most people wouldn't agree with, but statistically that is true. So you hear that young people don't use Facebook. Not true. Most of them are still on Facebook. No, they don't use it every day. So Facebook is still the most used social network, but number two would be Instagram and Snapchat. So I think if you want to get in front of young voters, Instagram and Snapchat is really where they spend their time and where you're going to make a good impact with them.
How's this spilling over into other races?
Well, I think
it's not just the presidential side.
I think that's probably where you can see it most manifested, only because, it's kind of changed the whole dynamics around. But I think in general, all candidates at every level are increasingly relying on this kind of technology, whether it's like virtual town halls or they're buying voter data and aggregating it with other sources to figure out how to micro-target people. I mean, why do you want to send a mail to someone or waste time with a phone bank calling people that aren't likely to vote? So when you can go to your state board of elections and buy voter data and buy these applications that let you slice it and dice it and put your volunteers out on the street or direct your mails, your emails, et cetera, to people that actually are interested in hearing from you because they're likely to vote, and even better, then you can target specific issues to those folks, it's having a huge impact on elections, I think, at every level.
And the biggest thing I would say that I still don't think many of them take advantage of is mass customization. So, you know, David and I are both voters. So let's say we can both vote, but a different message as a woman who's, you know, mid 30, a different message will appeal to me than a man who's in his 50s, let's say. And so it's not just about saying, oh, these are two people who are both likely to vote for us. Let's call them. Let's get some more information and really customize the message. So we're going to talk about women's issues to women, or we're going to have a picture of a woman in the email, whereas we're going to tell stories about, you know, men in the email that we target toward men. And a lot of businesses do this. It's extraordinarily effective. So it's really not just looking at the data, but using it in smart ways with mass customization to really speak on a one-to-one level.
Yeah, and it circles back around to social media, too, because that's just one more source for information, to Krista's point, that you can get about these people that's going to be relevant, so that, again, you can kind of micro-target a message to specific people. You know, again, what Krista cares about and what I care about might be different. And if you get enough information about the two of us, you can figure out how to use these tools to send just the right messages to us. And it's really powerful.
So big data has become a big thing here.
I think so. And I think it will increasingly continue to be, especially when you pull in data brokers and all these other people that have all this additional information that can be aggregated in to just keep honing those messages.
Talking with Krista Nair, who is lead trainer and digital and CEO of Bootcamp Digital, and also software architect and developer Dave Hatter. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Krista, but what about fundraising? Is this making fundraising easier for these guys?
Oh, yeah. I mean, fundraising is a huge factor where digital comes into play. In 30 seconds, I can donate to a campaign as much or as little as I want. And I think online donations are probably a game changer, especially when you look at some of the statistics around the campaigns that are making just as much money off individual donations as those who primarily focus on corporate backers. It really does show the power of individuals when you harness their passion.
Yeah, I totally agree with Krista. I think it's a total game changer. Again, I think without it, you would have seen a lot of these candidates go away much sooner. But because they have new ways to target people that care about their message and then very easily convert them into a donation, because to Krista's point, you know, you read something, you click a link, you go donate there instead of, well, I got this envelope and I'm going to fill this thing out later and I got this FEC message thing and all this stuff. You know, literally one or two clicks, boom, you've made a donation. And I think, you know, you need to look no further than someone like Bernie Sanders. And I meant to say earlier, this is like the crazy hair election. You know, you got it on both sides this
yeah,
time, right?
You do.
That's true.
I mean, that guy's raking in massive amounts of money from small contributions.
Is Bernie Sanders doing the best job with the small contributions via social media?
Seems like it to me. I honestly haven't followed it that closely, Mark, but it seems to me he is just raking in massive amounts of cash from small contributions.
Now, John Kasich is not using social media as effectively as the other candidates. Why would a candidate allow that kind of lag to happen?
Well, I think a part of it is if you look at the candidates and you look at their personal use of social media, right?
Okay.
I mean, so
that'll tell you a lot.
Right? I mean, like, so look, here's the thing. if a candidate comes to me and says, okay, I'm running for office, turn social media on now. It doesn't work that way. You don't get huge results overnight. Whereas somebody who already sees the value in it and has started to establish a presence, connect with people, can then bump that up and amplify it once they start getting on a national platform. And my guess would be that if you looked at the Kasich campaign, there was probably very little social media going on before he announced. He was also late to announce. And so, you know, you can't just build this up out of nowhere one day where you say, oh, now we're ready. Come on over. It takes time and effort. And so I think a big part of it is starting early and starting to build that platform and those audiences before you're in a position where you need it. Because once you need to start delivering that message, you need the audience there already.
Totally agree. I don't have anything to add. Spot on as far as I'm concerned.
Dave, is social media another aspect of the current feeling that the establishment and the traditional media are being questioned and people just don't rely on them or trust them as much as they used to?
I think it is. I think you can see it in people's comments about it online, as well as, again, there's really no way for them to control what people are doing or saying out there, whether it's about the candidates or about the party establishment themselves. You know, people can go online and say whatever they want, whenever they want, pretty much however they want. And Krista mentioned earlier, you know, it's not just the social media. It's you throw the mobile in, too. And now it's like, well, I saw something earlier today and I'm going to go home later and get on Facebook and I forget about it. Now the phone is with me all the time. I'm getting a steady stream of this stuff. And, you know, whether it's, again, the RNC or the DNC, somebody says something. If I don't like it, I can immediately comment on it right there on the spot. So I think to a large extent, their influence continues to be it continues to wane as Krista mentioned, whether it's, you know, independent bloggers or it's the candidates themselves. Are able to get a message out to large numbers of people where they're, it makes the media and the establishment increasingly less relevant.
And what are some of the mobile apps that are out there, the political mobile apps?
Well, like, I guess if you want to just talk specifically political, like Teletown Hall, there's a bunch of things where as a candidate, you can do town halls, you can use tools to, again, download like voter data and take it out with you so it tells you, you know, go to this house and here it is on a map. And when I get there, I press a button and all that stuff is being reported back so I can tell how effective my volunteers and so forth out there are. There's all kinds of stuff like that out there. But even if it's just something like I got Twitter on my phone and Bernie Sanders says something I like, so I share
it. And you're a Bernie Sanders follower.
Yeah. Or he says something I don't like and I decide that I want to jump into the fray and comment on it. You know, it's with me all the time. It's always there. I don't have to remember when I get home later to do this. So you get a lot more engagement that way.
And I think the name of the game is meeting people where they already are, right? That's why television was big, radio, billboards, right? It's about getting in front of people where they're already spending their time rather than trying to get them to do something different. And now we know people are spending more time in social media than most traditional media outlets. So it's really important to be there with the right message. The other thing I want to mention that I think is super powerful is the immediacy of feedback. So when we were just hearing, you know, you can like a comment or you can unfollow if you disagree or you can tell them you disagree. You know, before, what kind of feedback did a candidate get about their messages and about what they were talking about? Not a whole lot. Now, let's say I have four messages I want to test. I could just throw out four tweets. Which one got the most retweets? Which one got the most likes? That gives me data and information about how my messages are performing with people. And I think smart candidates are using all of these tools, not just to push messages, but really to get information back to make smarter choices with their own campaigns.
And or take advantage of like breaking trends and so forth. If something happens and you decide that you want to jump into the fray, pretty much real time as it's breaking, you can just jump in. Now, obviously that can be risky, could go wrong for you. But you have the opportunity to engage pretty much real time to whatever degree you want. So you can, you know, some event may have happened 10 years ago and it was all over before you could even get in front of a microphone to comment on it. Now you can jump right into the thing.
Yeah, Dave, we were talking earlier about how this is contributed to the unruly nature of this particular political election cycle. Has this been good for democracy or are things getting out of hand with this?
That's a really good question, Mark. I don't know. I'm about 50-50 on that one. You know, Krista talked about authenticity and transparency. I think those things are important. I certainly would like more transparency and would like for candidates to say what they really think as opposed to what they think I want them to say. But at the same time, I think, you know, a lot of times people don't realize the long-term nature of what they're saying and doing on these platforms, and they get in these heated arguments and so forth. And I think it potentially leads to a more divisive environment. Again, if you heard something on TV and you had 3 or 4 hours to think about it before you responded, chances are you might do it in a more calm, reasonable way than when you can just sit down and punch something into your phone or keyboard. And, you know, I think that fuels the divisiveness of it, the speed with which it happens.
Well, and the other contributing factor to that, I think, is that people can choose to segment their news more so they only see certain types of things that support their pre-existing ideas. So if I look at a lot of people on my social networks who are really extreme on one side or another, and I look at the kind of sources they're sharing, they're not sharing a mainstream balanced view, right? So, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, most media outlets were at least attempting or claiming to be somewhat balanced in their coverage. It was fact-based. They did research. Now, if I'm a hardcore conservative, I can only read conservative viewpoints. And that just furthers putting me into, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. There's no other way of thinking about this. And I think from a divisiveness standpoint, you definitely see a lot of that with the fact that it's not just major networks that have to worry about mass appeal and have to worry about fact checking. Many people are getting their news that they believe is accurate from niche sources on the side that they already believe in. And I think that is somewhat damaging to providing balanced and open-minded viewpoints to people.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Chris is right. You can obviously follow sources that basically feed your confirmation bias one way or the other. And then as a result of that, and you mentioned the niche sources, that's one of the things, I guess, that I personally, I mean, I'm very engaged in social media like Krista is. And one of the things that I find the most aggravating from folks that I'm connected with is they share stuff from places I've never heard of with these ridiculous headlines. And it's like, okay, could that be true? Well, maybe. But since I have no idea about the validity of this source, A, I'm not going to just assume it's real. And B, I'm not going to share it myself because who knows? You know, this might be some dude in his mom's basement coming up with this stuff.
But you can create your very own echo chamber with this, can't you?
You really can. Yeah. And you see a lot of it. I mean, you can. I see it a lot with people I'm connected to, just repeating patterns of people. The same sets of people sharing the same just really off-the-wall stuff over and over from these sources I've never heard of with these just insane headlines and so forth. And, I mean, I don't know why you would want to potentially damage your own credibility by sharing that stuff. But people do.
Well, so. Krista mentioned people may be tired of political comments on Facebook. You see more and more people blocking their friends who are making political comments?
Well, you know, I lose people on Facebook every day. Almost every day I go up and I go down. I go up and I go down.
Yeah, I mean, so. I do think as an individual, you need to really think about what you choose to share. So, I mean, I do social media for a living. I'm very cognizant of my personal brand. I do not ever post about politics or comment on politics because, for me, it's just too big of a risk. Regardless of what I said, I would probably offend someone. And I can't vote anyways. I'm Canadian, but...
She's smarter than me. See, I have a hard time keeping my mouth shut.
That's always my disclaimer.
That's good, Chris. I like it.
But I do think people need to consider the consequences because you do hear people saying, oh, I unfriended these people. I blocked people who are posting views that I find offensive. And I just think you need to think about the potential consequences depending on who you choose to be friends with.
I definitely want to reiterate that. I touched on it briefly earlier. You know, I don't think a lot of folks really fully understand the potential long-term consequences of what they're doing online. This stuff is not private, no matter what the privacy settings say. If you share something that I can see, you cannot stop me from doing whatever I want with it.
Well, on the other side of that, Dave, how wary should voters be about big data in the hands of big campaigns?
Well, I think that's the other side of it. In addition to the fact that you may be causing yourself all kinds of reputation damage, getting yourself fired, et cetera, for things you're saying or doing online that you may or may not realize are public in the long run, and that basically now lasts forever. But the flip side of that is, you know, these candidates, these campaigns are hoovering that stuff in. They want to know as much as they can about you. So going back to Krista's point, you know, they can focus in on getting a message that will resonate with you and doing it at the least cost to them. And having access to all of this data and things you're talking about and saying out there only makes it easier for them to do. So, yeah, while I'm not saying that's necessarily bad, you do need to think about the long-term ramifications of the stuff you're doing and how that's going to be used to reach you, target you, et cetera.
And I will say, when I do training on social media for companies, it blows their mind when they see how much data Facebook has about you. Because Facebook knows not just the stuff you tell Facebook, but they use third-party data sources to extrapolate information about you. Facebook knows your income range. how many people told Facebook how much they make? Hopefully no one. But they, if you read it, they use self-reported data. They know where you live, and they piece all this information together. So a lot of people would be horrified to learn how much information Facebook has about them.
And it's not unique to Facebook by any stretch. There's everyone out there who knows anything about this is trying to get as much data as they can.
So, Dave, do you think the candidate that has the edge in technology is necessarily going to win the White House?
I don't think necessarily, but I think it gives them a gigantic leg up, not only because, as I said before, they can spend less money to get to people that are actually likely to vote, but they can get to them with more – with messages that will resonate better. So I think they have a gigantic leg up.
Because the name of the game in politics is – you know, you have the people who are pretty extreme on one side or another. You're not going to change their points of view, right? That's what it's a big joke about Facebook political arguments is it's not really changing anyone's mind. So the big idea is the undecideds and the people who live toward the center. And that's who you really want to spend your time and energy on. And what's great about it is that you can actually find out exactly who those people are by the things that they've liked, the things they're interested, or the things they haven't liked. And so it allows for that targeting of the exact right people, which can be really powerful to campaigns.
Chris and Dave, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Anytime. Thank you.
Bootcamp Digital CEO and lead trainer Krista Nair and software architect and developer Dave Hatter.